New Thinking Aloud is presented by the California Institute for Human Science, Mind, Body, Spirit University. Visit their website at cihs.edu.
Thinking Aloud. Conversations on the leading edge of knowledge and discovery with psychologist Jeffrey Mishlove.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jeffrey Mishlove. Our topic today is living the awakened life. My guest is Suzanne Giesemann, who was named by Watkins Mind, Body, Spirit magazine in 2022 as one of the 100 most spiritually influential living people. She is a former U.S. Navy commander and served as a commanding officer and aide to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. She is also a spirit medium and is the author of 17 books on spiritual topics. Her newest book is The Awakened Way, Making the Shift to a Divinely Guided Life. Suzanne is in Idaho for the summer, and now I'll switch over to the internet video. Welcome, Suzanne. It's a real pleasure to be with you on New Thinking Aloud.
Oh, Jeffrey, it's an honor to be with you. Thank you.
I had the privilege of being interviewed by you just a few weeks ago, and now it's my pleasure to return the favor. You have an amazing life story, and I think we need to start there because on the one hand, you rose to the highest echelons inside the military, and at the same time, as you describe it, you were experiencing a lot of the tensions and torments, frankly, that are natural to the life of a biological organism such as us humans.
That's right. I love how you put that. Yeah, it's not easy being human.
I think it's interesting how people who are, as you describe yourself, sort of suffering on the inside but extremely successful on the outside.
In the past, yes, there's no more suffering, thank goodness, thanks to all that transpired, absolutely.
And if I understand it correctly, after you had served in the military as an aide to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, it was only after you left the military that you discovered your spiritual work I guess it's fair to call you a spirit medium, but even more than that, I see you as a spiritual teacher.
I'm glad you do, Jeffrey, because the mediumship was very unexpected, as is being a spiritual teacher, but it's just a small part of what I do now. It provides the evidence and the anecdotes that show that there is a greater reality, but that's not my true calling. It's definitely as a teacher. But I tell people that back when I was aide to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, if I had had any idea what I would be doing in the future, certainly nobody let on to me that was what was going to happen. It's been a total surprise.
Well, I think that's very interesting. You and I share, I think, in common the fact that our lives have been touched by spiritual guidance. But in my case, I don't really think of it so much as a surprise. It was just sort of a natural evolution. But for you, it was literally a lightning strike that started things.
That is true. I think you can see in the background here up on the little shelf behind me, there it is a very small picture of my stepdaughter, Susan, who followed in her father's footsteps, joining the military. My husband is a retired Navy captain. She joined the Marines, a really tough assignment for a young woman as an enlisted woman. And she was doing very well, but was struck by lightning in 2006 and was 6 months pregnant at the time. So both she and the baby died on that day. And that's what absolutely took me in a different path.
I can imagine this is your stepdaughter. And you must have had a very strong attachment to her and puzzlement. Why would somebody be cut down like that right in the prime of their life and pregnant to boot?
Exactly. And I had no answers to the why question. And I had no spirituality to fall back on. I had no belief system about an afterlife. But when we went to the funeral and I saw her body in the coffin, Jeffrey, I just knew there was more. I knew you couldn't kill the spirit. So you had a knowing and it was your natural evolution. But for me, it was an epiphany. And I'm always being very mission oriented. That became my new mission, to connect with her.
And which subsequently occurred.
It did, but it took years of meditating daily and unwavering devotion to asking, Susan, let me see you. Susan, show yourself to me. Not, are you there? I knew she was there, but what's it going to take to connect with you? Then the beautiful part is, clearly Spirit had better ideas for me than just connecting with Susan, because in those years of trying to connect with her, I opened up to the greater reality that you're very familiar with.
Let's talk about that. You began before Susan manifested in your awareness. There were others, I presume.
Oh, yes. I came to know that we all have guides. And as a former Navy officer and commander, I didn't want to be talking about spirit guides. That's out there stuff. I didn't believe in angels, but they convinced me with the evidence and the experiences that we are all surrounded by help when we ask for it. And I began to connect with other people's loved ones before I connected with Susan. All part of a plan, and she even came through a year or so ago to say, you weren't supposed to connect with me right away, or you would have stopped. You would have stopped with me. Instead, we just opened up to connecting with anyone.
You've elucidated an important principle here, that things are planned for us, that our lives are, they may seem accidental to us, but from another perspective, I guess it would be fair to say nothing is really accidental.
I'm not convinced that there are unexpected things, but certainly synchronicities and the web of connections shows itself in wondrous ways, as you know.
Well, I'm glad you hedged your answer there, because to say nothing is accidental is a pretty strong statement.
It is, and I know that due to us having free will, that's the wild card, and you may be right on track, but somebody else exercises their free will, and that upsets things a bit.
The fact that your daughter-in-law was struck by lightning became not only an opening for you, but also a theme in your life. The idea of a person being struck by lightning has become very important to you.
It did, because...
And I might mention it's important to me, too.
Oh, well, I want to hear why. In giving a presentation about the afterlife and sharing how Susan passed, this was at the Edgar Cayce Institute, I believe, and a couple in the front row looked stunned when they heard that Susan was struck by lightning, because their son was also killed by lightning. For both of us, it was the first time we had met anybody else who had endured that same kind of tragedy. And I will just put a caveat on there and say that it's a tragedy for us in our human form when someone passes. But I know that it wasn't a tragedy for Susan, nor is it for us at the soul level when we die, because we don't actually die. But I came to know this couple's son across the veil. His nickname is Wolf, and ended up writing a book about his story, because he actually left proof in the form of a drawing and a poem that he knew he was going to die the next day by a lightning strike. And it goes on from there. But yes, the whole theme of lightning is pretty strong in my life.
It's a very important symbol for me. Back in 1968, I was a real estate broker, and I had a real estate company at the time that I named Lightning Real Estate.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's been a theme in my life for a long time, but it borders on the paranormal when I wrote a book called The PK Man about a fellow named Ted Owens, who had amazing psychokinetic powers, including control over lightning. He could just point his finger and concentrate, and lightning would strike. So I wrote the book about that man, and lightning was a very important symbol for him as well.
Wow. And it was years later, Jeffrey, that we learned that Susan's, well, we remembered, we didn't realize it at the time, that her dog that she got only months before passing by lightning strike, she named Thor, who was the Norse god with a lightning bolt. And her other dog was named Athena, who was the Greek goddess of thunder and lightning. The signs, the synchronicities of the web just go on and on.
To me, it says that the universe is alive and that lightning is one of the manifestations of that universal life force.
Without a doubt. And it's it was used as a tool to get Susan to cross when she was supposed to, as part of this plan that you're talking about, because she was in a rollover car accident, oh, probably about a year before she passed, and wasn't even scratched. I believe it was the universe was saying, hey, you know, there are going to be bigger plans as a result of your not being here in physical form. And that accident didn't do it. And so we send a lightning bolt when it's not even raining.
The young man, Wolf, who was also struck by lightning and seemed to have a premonition of that it would happen. He left a drawing and a poem, which was pretty explicit. He talked about the, if I recall his wording, the light from nature would come and release his soul.
That's right. That's right. And he, just before that lightning strike, he was sitting having coffee with friends and he suddenly said, I have to go now. And he just stood up and walked straight to the cemetery where he always meditated, a very unusual place to meditate. And that is where the lightning strike happened. He left his apartment clean and neat, like it had never been when his parents saw it. It usually looked like a storm had gone through, but he straightened everything up. He had everything in order. He knew he was leaving.
It's really quite amazing.
And then what's really amazing is in his final picture in with that poem was a picture of what would happen afterwards, after he was struck. It's a phenomenal story that I love to share because people always try to find ways to explain it. And there's only one way to explain it, that we're not only human. And in fact, it's Wolf who led me to all of the teaching that I teach today. It's all wrapped up in what I call the awakened way. And that came from Wolf's messages. He came back to me through a reading I ultimately did for his parents. When I got to know him, I said, this is one of the most powerful souls I've ever met, who was a normal family member. And it's because he had this message to share with all of us.
And the fundamental message, as I understand it, is that we have a dual nature. Yes, we are biological creatures, but we also have a soul. And the soul is, and correct me if I don't say it the way you would like, but the soul is outside of space and time itself. It's eternal.
That's absolutely the way I'd say it, Jeffrey. But I would also not say we have a soul. I would say we are a soul that has a body.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah. And all of this was communicated in a series of messages from the young man, Wolf, himself.
That's right. The connection I had with him lasted for a few months. I don't hear from him so much anymore, but it was so clear. And he just guided me step by step to discover why he brought certain things up in the reading I did for his parents that didn't make sense at the time. So it's like pulling apart a mystery and leading to this realization that this is what I want you all to know, that as a species, humanity is out of balance. You're just way too much in the head or in the left brain. You need to balance that with your soul's attributes, being in the heart, flowing, being in that right brain type of mentality. But it's more of an energy, isn't it? So finding the balance has made all the difference for me and then for all those that I share this with. And it's the key to end the suffering.
A lot of people who have recognized this dual nature of the human being have also suggested that we are born into conflict because our spiritual nature and our animal nature are somewhat at odds with each other. The animal nature, first and foremost, wants to survive and will do all kinds of things, including hurting others in order to survive, whereas for the spiritual nature, survival is not particularly a concern.
That's what I have learned by talking to those who have passed, thousands of souls who I've communicated with who are no longer worried about the pain that we go through because they know that it's temporary and they know that it leads to growth and that this animal nature you talked about is built into the human body. We can't help but react when we're only in human nature and we perceive a threat. But what I learned from Wolf and the other spirits I talked to is that other nature is right here, but we miss it when we focus so much on the objective external world.
So the goal of the Awakened Way, is, as you teach it, is to get people to live more in harmony with their spiritual nature, with their soul.
Absolutely. By first coming to experience it through meditation, through practices of presence, through hearing stories about who we really are, you educate yourself about your true nature, then you experience it. Once you experience the peace, the joy, the connection that's right here, right now, when we get beyond the animal human nature, then you realize, oh, I can make a shift at any time. I can engage higher beings. I can embody more of my higher self beyond the human body. And that just changes everything.
Let's talk about your guides for a moment. I was a little confused because you refer to a collective intelligence called Sinea that represents, if I understand it correctly, the collective mind of many guides.
So they tell me, and definitely when they step in, it's much more powerful than any one being that I connect with when I do sessions for people, or even when I connect with my own personal guide. But Sinea stepped in, 2010, a long time ago, was so powerful and had both a feminine and a masculine feel. And I asked them, who are you? This is a thing that happens a lot, Jeffrey. People come to me and they say, I experienced a presence. And I said, and they said, who was it? I said, well, did you ask them? No, just engage them. So I asked who they were, and they said, we are a collective consciousness of guides. And in fact, they do change from time to time. I sit with them every day and get a message from them daily. Thousands of messages they've given me. And sometimes it feels like a group. Sometimes it's one person. I've had several people identify themselves as part of the group, and the rest, I just have stopped worrying about it and just accept whatever they have to share as long as it's helpful and healing.
And you've also referred to a personal guide named Boris, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, that's the personal guide I was talking about. And he came to me after he'd already been working with me, but in the middle of the night, and showed me a lifetime that we had both experienced in physical form together. In the 1800s, he gave me specific historical details about that time period that I couldn't know. He explained things that I looked up online, and it was absolutely fascinating to me. And I know that those in the spirit world know that I need that kind of verifiable information, or I would just think, this is crazy, forget it.
That's a very important factor in all of this, and I have to concur, as a parapsychologist, we're very interested in evidence.
I'm glad you are, because there's so many people that just are happy with what they sense personally, and that's great. But if we're going to be sharing this with people as a collective experience, then we need the evidence.
I was thinking, for example, the story you told earlier about Wolf, and you show in your book the drawing that he made and the poem that he wrote just the day before he was struck by lightning. That needs to be published somewhere in a refereed scientific journal so that the academic community can take that kind of evidence into account.
Absolutely. And then there's another picture in there that shows his favorite t-shirt. His parents saw him all the time in this t-shirt. And yet, the day before he was struck and killed by lightning, he defaced that shirt by cutting out the picture on the front of the shirt and tacking it to the wall facing the poem that said he was going to allow the light of nature to free his soul. And what was on the picture in that t-shirt, Jeffrey? Do you remember?
A bolt of lightning.
That's it. I mean, come on.
How much more explicit does he need to get?
Exactly. Yeah.
But you encourage people who are opening up, who are engaged in a spiritual awakening, to ask for evidence.
Yes, I do. And I know this really helps people because they don't realize we can do that. I make it fun sometimes. I call it the sign game. I know that those across the veil don't mind when we ask for evidence-based signs. They want us to know they're here. They want us to believe, and they will pull out all the stops and knock your socks off if you are willing to play with them.
Well, speaking of playing with them, you write a fascinating story in your book about how Boris gave you very explicit directions to visit a retreat camp, and it turned out to be a negative experience that I guess later became positive.
Oh, absolutely, in that it convinced me beyond any doubt that spirit guides are real. We'd been traveling probably 2,000 miles for several months in our RV on our annual trek across the country in the summer months, and I always take books with me. We don't watch TV. I love to read. And I had finished a book. Oh boy, time to read a new book. So I reached up into the cabinet where I had all these books awaiting to be read. They'd been there for months. And I looked at the covers and I said, oh, I'll read that one next. Hadn't opened the covers at all. And I felt Boris and I heard him say, no, not that one, that one. And my human side said, no, I want to read this one. A little bit of pushback there. And he said, no, that one. So I've learned, don't push back more than once. I pulled that book down off the shelf, and I'll try to make this brief because it's in the book, like you said. But he made me turn to the back of the book, and there was a picture of a place we had just visited the day before. On months of travel, we were right in the same area. And I looked down at the bottom of the page, and there was an address of a retreat center that we were going to be passing by, exactly passing by the very next morning. I just knew that that was a spirit thing. And I said to my husband, we have to go visit this place. And like you said, it turned out to be a very negative experience because it had a very cult-like feel. It was frightening to both of us. My husband and I looked at each other. I say it was like a Hotel California moment. You know, you can come in, but you cannot leave. And luckily, we were able to leave. We got in our RV, and I looked at my husband. I said, I need to talk to Boris. He said, yes, please. Like, what was that all about? Why did he clearly send me to that place? And so I just went into meditation, and I said, why did you send me there? And the answer changed my life. He said, two reasons. Number one, to let you know that we in the spirit world absolutely know exactly where you are at all times. And literally, that was true from the way he guided me in that moment to read that book. But number two, he said, some of those other books in the cabinet are going to send you down some rabbit holes that you really don't need to go down. Your path, Suzanne, is to teach only love. It's not that the books were wrong or that the information was bad, but they would have taken me into far more esoteric and, let's just put it bluntly, really woo-woo stuff, really out there things that would have perhaps alienated me from a more mainstream audience. And I know that's my mission. With my background, people trust me, and I'm very proud of that and grateful for that, because I want people to know that we all have guides and we all have access to insights and wisdom and guidance. And I want them to look for that, because as we do, then we find that love that is my path to teach.
That is so profound. I think we're getting right to the heart of things here. I know For myself, I love woo-woo. I'm deeply interested in the afterlife and its many dimensions. I'm fascinated by UFOs and anything associated with the paranormal. I think it's very important from a scientific point of view. But when you're working with people who are trying to deal with the struggles of just being human that we've alluded to already, nothing is more important than teaching love.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And that's the bottom line. And in fact, my guides, they know that I love acronyms because of military background. My acronyms are always big for military folks. And they've given me an acronym, the acronym LIFE. We are here for life. Love in full expression. That's who and what we are. We're life unfolding. And if we are not expressing our true nature, which is love, we're missing out.
I totally concur. And I think when you interviewed me the last time, I mentioned my motto, which is something I try to live up to. I can't claim that I do, but it's important to me, which is to love all people all the time. And not just all people, everything. Everything all the time. And I think that's also what you're aiming for.
It is, Jeffrey, and many people who, if they were where I was before I started down this path, I would have heard that and said, I can't love everyone. And that is indicative simply that you're still in that left hemisphere of the brain, the survival and the get it done managerial side. But the right side of the brain knows our connection, knows we are all united, allows us to love each other because we are experiencing that connection. So it's just a matter of, again, getting back to making that shift and realizing we're both. There's nothing wrong with getting it done and being in the left brain. But when you don't balance it with the love and the connection, that's when we feel empty, hopeless. That's when we suffer. I know what it feels like to feel empty. I know what it feels like to try to fill that hole, and nothing will permanently fill it. But accessing the soul of us, that fills it. Wow.
Beautifully put. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what you're saying is we can't command ourselves or tell ourselves we must love everything. What I think you're suggesting is we don't have to because it's already there. That's our soul. Our soul, it's our natural state of being at the soul level, is to feel love for all of creation.
That's absolutely what I'm saying. And until we learn to subdue a bit that left side of our being, the left hemisphere actions, and activate the soul activity that takes place more in the right hemisphere of the brain, we can't imagine how to love everybody. But just a few minutes a day of meditation or practices in presence, the desire to live more from the soul's perspective activates those circuits that the brain has been keeping us from having, but that are our true nature beyond the brain. They come alive when the body dies. So why wait till we die to discover the love that's already here?
One of the things that you're also saying is that we have the ability to, what would be the best word, to access wisdom, I think, is what I'd say, that the soul has a certain kind of natural wisdom. I'd even go further. It's not just wisdom. It's extrasensory abilities. It can see into distant parts of time and space. So all knowledge is essentially available to us if we ask for it.
Absolutely. And it's because we are connected to all that is right now. So when we ask for it, that ignites our intuition. The definition of intuition is direct knowing. When you can bring that into any projects, work projects, left brain projects, now you have balance, now you have greater flow. My book, The Awakened Way, was absolutely a product of tapping into higher consciousness. I read some of those passages and I say, wow, I don't even remember writing that. It's not exactly channeled, but you get in a higher state. I have several recordings that I narrated for the Binaural Beats recordings with the Hemisync company. Six of them, in fact. And every one of the scripts I channeled from my guides. I realized I could sit down and write out what I want people to know, but why not just go higher? Why not access something beyond the norm? So I simply went into meditation and said, I know you can do this better than me. What should we say? And I turned on the tape recorder and got my script. I was told that in the past, the Hemisync company will edit your script, will go back and forth with an editing process, change it till it's just right. All six of those scripts, they never changed a word because we go higher.
And if I recall correctly, you describe this as inspired writing and distinguish it from other forms of channeling where the channeler is not even conscious of what's coming through.
That's right. And we're all capable of this. Just a little bit of practice, learning a few techniques, anybody can do inspired writing. Connect with your own loved ones who have passed. Can you imagine? It's absolutely possible for all of us. This is the most beautiful message, that we don't have to be born with this awareness of this ability to connect with loved ones across the veil. If it's your calling to be a medium, that will become clear. But just to connect with mom or dad or a child or a partner who has passed, we can all learn to do that.
At the same time, you point out in your own history that it took you a very long time before you first were able to communicate with your stepdaughter who was struck by lightning. And the reason was it wasn't meant to happen until other things had happened first. So I guess it's important to realize that you need to be patient. It's not as if you can just snap your fingers and automatically do all of these things.
That's exactly right. People look at me and they say, oh, that just opened up for her. But no, it took dedication and commitment. People say, oh, I don't have that military discipline, but it's not that. I'm sure that plays a role in it. It's this inner knowing that there is something more, and you're just honoring that knowing, and you commit yourself to just a few minutes a day to shut out the external world and learn from what arises within.
Now, normally, from our biological point of view, we live in a world of dualisms, good and bad, right and wrong, not a world in which everything is interconnected. And in the dualistic world, I think we're encouraged, frankly, to hate. We are encouraged to hate all kinds of things. Crime, for example, criminals should be hated. All sorts of marginalized groups are sometimes, they become culturally the victims of large-scale hatred. And I would think as you open up more to your soul nature, you also realize that a kind of paradox, because on the one hand, we are biological, and we have anger. We have, I hate to say it, but sometimes I feel hatred. And part of the process of finding balance is learning how to let go of that.
And the first step, Jeffrey, is recognizing it. We're so used to responding in the human way that happily, the more you come to know your soul nature, the less positive aspects of the human side become so apparent when they flare up. And it's just this sudden, oh, that's not the real me. And you acknowledge it and you set it aside and you shift. It's also a matter of coming to change your word choice. For example, I no longer will ever say, I don't like them. I don't like that person. Or certainly I don't use the hate word. I say, I don't resonate with them. Because that's what's going on. It's an energetic dissonance with some people's energy field, their behavior, the way they express themselves. But I see their soul, so I don't dislike them, but I sure don't resonate with certain actions. And it just changes the whole way we interrelate with people.
There are people who from a conventional point of view, have done horrible, horrible things. Hitler is always used as the archetypal example of a person who has done horrible things. But at the same time, that is a soul. And I don't know if we've gotten this far yet, but I've heard it said, and I kind of concur, that there is no plural of soul. There's one soul.
You're the first person that said it, and I would agree with you. One soul, and then it compartmentalizes itself into smaller souls. You really can't put a box around that, but it takes on certain patterns that we identify as individuals, but it's one soul. I agree with you completely.
So that would imply that even the worst villains in human history, we are one with.
We all have that potential within us. We are all limitless beings that could express themselves in any way. And a person like Hitler was completely blinded to the true nature and the interconnectedness. That's what I see when I see people that hurt other people. They absolutely do not realize their soul nature, or they could not hurt anybody else.
I'm reminded of Jesus on the cross saying, "Forgive them, Lord, for they don't know what they do."
Indeed, yeah.
This way of being that you refer to as the awakened way is really very different than conventional human behavior, the sort of thing that almost every family teaches their children.
Unfortunately, you're right. And yet it's so easy to live this way, but it does take that awareness and the commitment. It's very easy to slip back into only human behavior, as I call it, because we're not only human. We tell each other, "Oh, I'm only human." That is wrong. We're not. And so coming to learn that and live that way does take a commitment. But that is what the challenge is, that most people are not aware of it. And I look around and I see some people talking to their kids in the store, and I just say, "Ooh, that's not exactly the way we want to teach them."
I also hear you saying that if people decide that they want to live more as an expression of soul rather than as an expression of their biological components, it's doable. It can be achieved.
It's so doable. We look at social media, and Facebook is this place where a lot of people get at each other like this. And yet I have a Facebook page that is nothing but love. We have 99.9% positive comments. I have this, we call it the Awaken Way community. I have monthly webinars. I lead retreats and cruises. And the thing that's so astounding in my classes in person, people come and they say, "I've never felt energy like this." It's because when you get awakened people together, it's a love fest. So we just need to get that vibe going with more people. It is definitely infectious. We just need it to go viral.
I think I was gifted by being born with the family name of Mishlove. It sort of set a pattern for me, you know, thinking, what does that name mean? And I began thinking, well, Mishlove means you got to love everybody and everything.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. My father got a family name for his middle name, and it's Love. He was Oliver Love was his middle name. And he was embarrassed by that. He would never tell people what it was, but he had zero belief in the afterlife. He thought when you're dead, you're dead. The curtain comes down. And I have since heard from him since he passed and got beautiful evidence from him. And I can't even say it's a shame he didn't learn that while he was here. I see it all as everybody's just unfolding at their own rate. And next time around, he may figure it out before he passes.
Well, here's an interesting question. When you say next time around, we haven't delved into reincarnation, but except you hinted that you had a past life with your guide, Boris. I've heard it said that, you know, before we achieve, you know, final enlightenment, we may need to live 35,000 human lifetimes.
I'm not an afterlife reincarnation expert by any means, but that experience with Boris telling me about my past life, that convinced me that it's real. My guides telling me about reincarnation has really convinced me that we do go round and round. I believe Wolf was a much more advanced soul, and some souls don't need to come back, but they do for what they have to share with us here and now. I will tell you that so many people say, I'm never coming back. I would have never chosen this life. But the more you awaken, you realize, well, yeah, we did choose it. And what are we going to do with that? And you know, the farther down you go, the higher up you go, and you discover that underneath it all is this underlying level of joy that never changes. But it's not happiness. It's just this state of being that is absolutely blissful, and we can experience that now. That's heaven.
That's beautifully put, and I think it's so crucial. I'm pretty sure what you're referring to is what in Sanskrit is known as ananda, or bliss.
Yes, or yes, that. Yeah.
It's the ultimate nature of things if we let ourselves feel it. And yet I, too, hear from people quite a bit, viewers on this program, right, and say, I never want to come back. I've had guests who proclaim that we live on a prison planet, that this is a horrible planet to be born into, and yet my own experience is the opposite, that this is a wonderful planet for all of its problems.
Absolutely, and we're given each other to help each other through the down points. I remember when we had to say goodbye to my little dog, and I knew we had to help her cross the veil, and I knew it was going to be hard. I knew what I knew about the afterlife. And so I just want to tell everybody that even when you know who you are and we know we're not only human, that doesn't mean we don't temporarily feel pain. And so I surrounded myself with people who know what we know about the awakened way. And when Gretchen crossed the veil, there were several moments when I definitely wanted off the planet. Like, I didn't sign up for this. You know, we get back in that human mode. Yeah. But it just lasts a little bit because we know how to shift.
I suppose one of the things that always tests our spiritual awareness, our level of spiritual awakening, are the pains of life. It's so easy to feel when one is in pain and in despair that all of the spiritual teachings we have been living our lives based on might feel worthless at those moments.
But happily, we've talked about my book, and I believe we'll talk about this in another episode, you said, but there are so many tools we can learn to deal with those painful moments. So we've been talking about the theory here, but with my practical background, I have a whole toolkit that we can just dive into to pull ourselves out of the pit. Thank goodness.
Well, you talked about the importance of balance, and I imagine that the various tools in the toolkit, and we plan to have a completely separate interview so that we can focus just on the tools. I want all the new Thinking Aloud viewers to have a taste of these tools. So I'm looking forward to that interview a great deal. But what you're saying is that the resources that we need to live the awakened life are available to us here and now.
They absolutely are. But it's just amazing how it is possible to go through our whole lives and not realize that based on, you read the book, you know what I'm talking about when I say based on our BS. And that's an acronym, isn't it? It's another acronym, but it stands for belief system. You know, so many people are very entrenched in their only human belief system and many other beliefs that really keep us prisoner. And that's when life turns into a jail on this planet. If that's your BS and you're suffering, could there be another way? There is a better way. It's the awakened way.
Well, I think we can close on that note for people to remember if they feel stuck, it might be their BS.
That's it.
Suzanne Giesemann, what a joy to be with you. I'm so thrilled to be able to have this conversation and to share your beautiful presence with the New Thinking Aloud audience. Thank you so much for being with me and being with us.
You're welcome. It's a total pleasure.
And for those of you watching or listening, thank you for being with us, because you are the reason that we are here. Book 2 in the New Thinking Aloud Dialogues book series is a tribute to parapsychologist Russell Targ, celebrating his 90th birthday.